Welcome to the Skokie Colo Podcast. Here you can listen to recent shiurim given by members of the Colo and special guests who spoke at the Colo. For older shiurim, open the Learn tab above and select Audio Archive.
My name is Yirmiyahu Newman. I would like to share an insight on Parshas Ki Tzeitze. When the Torah talks about the Ben Sorer Umore, the wayward, rebellious son, the Torah tells us that this child is to be put to death before he grows older and can do very, very severe averas. Because we see now, as a youth, the propensity that he has to do bad actions and to make bad decisions. So to spare him of a worse fate when he grows older, he is killed now. It's a sort of chesed, a kindness, a mercy being extended by the Torah for this child. The question is asked. We find that Yishmael, as a youth, is on the verge of death, and Hashem is ready to save him. The Malachim come to Hashem and say, "Why are you saving Yishmael? In the future, his descendants will torture and agonize the Jews." And one such example is, in the future, the Jews will be thirsty, desperate for water in the desert, and the children of Yishmael will come out and offer them what to drink and give them empty flasks. And the Jews, expecting to have salvation and water, will open up their mouths and drink from the flasks, and air will come out and their insides will explode and they'll die. Therefore, how could you save this Yishmael when we know what his descendants are capable of doing? Hashem says, "Ba'asher husham, I only judge someone based on what they are now before me. Right now, Yishmael does not deserve to die." The question therefore is asked, why is a Ben Sorer Amora put to death based on what he will do in the future? He does not deserve to die, because right now he has definitely made some bad decisions and shown a habit of doing some bad things, but it is not worthy of death at this point. To answer this question, I heard a very good insight from Rav Yitzchak Ezrachi Shlita, who's a Rosh Hashiva of the Mir Yeshiva. He explains that Yishmael had the ability to listen. He heard. He was someone who listened to his father Avraham. Avraham Avinu kicked him out of the house. Yet, we find that Yishmael, towards the end of his life, did tshuva, and he extended proper honor to Yitzchak. There's a story brought in Pirkei Rabbi Elazar that when Avraham Avinu later in his life went to visit Yishmael to show that he still had a connection to him, Yishmael had a wife who was very stingy. And when Avraham Avinu asked for some food, the wife said, "I have no food, nothing to offer you." So Avraham Avinu said to the wife, "When Yishmael comes back home, tell him that an old man from Canaan came to visit him. And this old man says that the threshold of your house, Yishmael, is bad, meaning your wife is no good." When Yishmael came home and heard this, he understood that his father came to visit him and was saying that he should divorce his wife. He followed through and divorced his wife. We see that Yishmael had the ability to listen, to hear what was going on. And when a person hears what's going on and has the ability to listen and make proper decisions, there's always potential, even if he is someone who does averas. Therefore, it's very important to give him an opportunity and judge him as he is now. By the Ben Sorer Amora, the Torah says, "Einenu shomea b'kol avi v'imo." He shows the inability to listen. Since he shows the inability to listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we have to kill him now. It's the ultimate act of mercy. If a person doesn't have the ability to listen, there's no hope. If a person is full of the Yetzer Hara and they sin, but they have an ability to keep their ears open and ultimately repair themselves, there's hope. But if a person does not listen, there is no hope.
Shalom Aleichem, this is Ari Tennant. This week, I'd like to share with you a Devar Halacha. The Gemara in Brachos says that one is not allowed to get hanah, to get pleasure or benefit from this world, without a bracha. Whenever someone eats food, no matter how much it is, even the smallest amount, must make a bracha, meaning even just a small bite of bread or just a small piece of any type of food or even the littlest drink of any type of drink would still require a bracha rishona, whatever that bracha is. The question is, that I like to discuss, is bracha achrona. After someone eats, he's required to make a bracha achrona. But this halacha is not the same as bracha rishona. For a bracha achrona, one is required to eat a certain amount of food in a certain amount of time. This shear, this amount of food, is known as a kezias for solid foods and a revius for liquids, for drinks. A kezias and a revius is a shear of volume. And there's a vast discussion amongst the poskim what the actual amount is for a kezias or for a revius. For a kezias, it's roughly about 1 fluid ounce, a shear in volume. So that's roughly half a slice of bread, depending on the thickness of the bread, the density. For example, a bagel is going to have many more kezasim than a slice of thin white bread. For liquids, for drinks, shear, the amount of drink necessary to make a bracha achrona, is called a revius, which is roughly 3 to 4 ounces. And if one eats any less than these amounts, does not say a bracha achrona. That is the first step. The second halacha is, if one eats less than a kezias or drinks less than a revius, then he does not say a bracha achrona, whether the bracha achrona is me'en shalosh, meaning ala michya, or on wine, ala gefen, or on the shivas aminim, the fruits, ala peros, or brain of fashas. Benching is a little different, but we'll hold that off for later. Now that's the first qualification. One must eat a kezias or drink a revius. The next qualification for needing to say a bracha achrona is to eat that food in what's called a kedei achilas pras, or for drinking, a kedei shtias revius, which essentially means the normal amount of time it takes to eat that food. For example, let's say someone takes a brownie and spends 20 minutes nibbling on this small piece of food, it's a regular size. He would not say a bracha achrona because the eating has been expanded over such a long stretch of time. In order for someone to say a bracha achrona, he should eat, for example, a brownie or a cookie or anything else of that nature in under 4 minutes, ideally. If a little more than 4 minutes he eats it, it's questionable whether it makes a bracha achrona, but the best would be to have it in somewhere between 3 and 4 minutes, or of course less than that. For drinking, it's a little different. It's actually a little more stringent. In order for someone to make a bracha achrona on a drink, he's actually supposed to have that revius really in one moment, in one sitting. Since a revius is only 3 to 4 ounces, generally speaking, we do drink 3 to 4 ounces in one sip or in one gulp. So, for example, if someone's drinking out of a straw, someone's having a Slurpee or even a Coke or something else of that nature with a straw, generally speaking, he's not going to make a bracha achrona. The shaila that I would like to discuss today is the shaila of drinking things like coffee or tea, which are generally not had in that amount. One does not simply gulp down 4 ounces of hot coffee or hot tea all at once. So, seemingly, someone should not make a bracha achrona, generally speaking, when he has coffee or tea, according to what we said so far. The truth is that there is actually a machlokas amongst the poskim. Some poskim do say that one should still make a bracha achrona. And the reason that one would still make a bracha achrona is because this is the derech, the normal expected method or way of drinking coffee or tea. These poskim say that since coffee and tea are normally drunk in such a way that one sips on it little by little, one is still obligated to say a bracha achrona. After all, he is drinking it the way he's expected to drink it. That is what some poskim say. Other poskim say no. Chazal never differentiated the different types of drinks. Chazal simply obligated us to make a bracha achrona, provided that we have had that drink within a kedei revius, which is very quick, perhaps in one gulp or two gulps for a drink. It's interesting because the Mishnah Berurah does bring down himself in Hananus Adu Basuda, the way that one is supposed to conduct himself at meals, that one is supposed to have a drink in two gulps, not in one, which is interesting. You could probably use that over here and say that since Derech Eretz, the normal way of drinking is to have coffee and sips little by little, maybe it would be the same thing, since that is the way Chazal are telling us we're supposed to drink through manners, so too they would obligate us through Bracha Achrona. Now all that being said, the Mishnah Berurah brings down an interesting Eitza, a piece of advice to avoid this Shaila, and to make sure that you can make a bracha achrona when having coffee or tea. Mr. Peru says to do is that at the end of one's drink, he should leave over a revius to drink all at once, which is not much, about 3 to 4 ounces. For example, if you have an 8-ounce coffee, the problem is that's going to be about half your coffee. So it's questionable whether or not it's really going to work if you just wait to the very bottom of the cup and just drink that. Generally speaking, one would not make a bracha achrona then. If one has a larger cup, then it's more reasonable to leave over that amount, a revius, and be able to drink it all at once at the very end, to let that last bit get cold, and drink that all at once. Thank you very much for listening. We'll continue next time.
Hello, this is Ari Berean, and this week's Parsha, Parshas Ki Teitzei, we are reminded of many mitzvos that were mentioned previously in the Torah. And in the middle of Perachav Beis, we are told the mitzvah of Shuloch HaKein, the famous mitzvah of sending away the mother bird. When you come upon a nest with the mother bird on top, you're supposed to shoo away the mother bird and then take the eggs. But don't take the eggs while she's on the nest. And the reward for that mitzvah, the Torah says, L'man yitav lach, that it should be good for you, ve'arach le'yamim, and you have length of days. Such a tremendous reward for something that seems a very simple mitzvah. So much so that Rashi says, L'man yitav lach, ima mitzvah kalash ein bachisarim kis. If you look at such an easy mitzvah where there's no financial loss at all, Amra Torah l'man yitav lach v'arach l'yamim, and yet the Torah says you'll have length of days and you'll have good for you. Kol v'chomer l'matan scharan al mitzvos chamuros. All the more so the reward that Hashem will give you for difficult mitzvos. And the Torah then goes on to tell us many more mitzvos. The very next mitzvah is if you build a house, and there's a mitzvah to put up a makkah, put up a fence around the roof so that nobody should fall off the roof. And then it mentions when you plant a kerem, when you plant a vineyard, you should not plant kilaim, you shouldn't mix different species of plants inside that kerem. And when you sow a field, you shouldn't sow it together with an ox and a donkey pulling at the same time. And when you wear clothes, you shouldn't wear shatnes, and you should make sure it's tzitzis. So what's this list of all the mitzvos here? So again, Rashi comments in the next pasuk, ki sivna bayis chodesh, when you build a new house. It says, Im kayemes mitzvah shuloch hakein, if you were able to fulfill the mitzvah shuloch hakein, sending away the mother bird, this easy mitzvah we just mentioned, sovcha libnos bayis chodesh, in the end you'll get to build a new house. V'kayemes mitzvah makkah, then you get to fulfill the mitzvah of building up a fence. Shemitzvah goreres mitzvah, because one mitzvah causes another mitzvah. And then it continues, v'agil akerem, and then you'll get to plant a vineyard, and you get to fulfill the mitzvahs there. V'soda, and you'll get to plant a field, and the mitzvahs there. V'lubagadim na'im, and you get to wear nice clothes, and all the mitzvahs that go with your clothes. L'kach, Nismichu Parshios Halalu. And that's why all these parshas were connected. Because you see, when you start your way on the mitzvah, one mitzvah will lead to another mitzvah, will lead to another mitzvah, will lead to another mitzvah. In Pirkei Avos it says, Schar Mitzvah Mitzvah, which means the reward for doing a mitzvah is could be the mitzvah itself, but it's also the opportunity to do another mitzvah afterwards. Mitzvah Gereris Mitzvah. Just like Overis Gereris Over, if you put yourself on the wrong track, you could go farther and farther and farther down that road. If you put yourself on the right track, you have no idea what good can come from your actions as you continue on that path. And I'd like to share with you a story that relates to this idea. I heard the story from Rabbi Pesach Kron. There was once a boy in Detroit. He was from a non-religious family, but his family still connected to Judaism. They wanted him to go to Jewish school, but just till 8th grade, and then they wanted him to go to public school for high school. And he was the smartest kid in the class. He was really a genius, and he was leading the class, and he liked learning, and he was really into it, but he was going to public school in 9th grade, and the Rebbeim talked to him and his friends, "Why don't you stay in Jewish school? Why don't you come with us to high school?" And he said, "What can I do? My parents don't want me to go." And the school talked to the parents. The parents said, "Look, our son's a genius. He's going to be someone great. We don't want him to be in yeshiva. We want him to be in public school." And one of the fathers of one of the boys in the class, he had an idea. And he went up to this boy, and he said, "I know next year you're going to public school. This might be your last chance to learn. And you're really a genius. You know more than anyone else in the class. And this year, your class is learning Bava Kamma. It's one of the longest mesechtas. It's over 100 pages long." He said, "But I think if anyone could ever finish this mesechta in the year, I bet you could." And it was about halfway through the year. You still have like 5-6 months. If you were to finish this whole Masechta, I'm going to throw the biggest party for you. I'm going to invite the entire 8th grade and the entire 7th grade and the principal and all the teachers and your family and all the parents of all of your friends. And we're going to make a huge celebration for what you've accomplished." And the boy was really excited. He wanted a huge celebration in his honor. He said, "Okay, I'll give it a try." And he learned every single day. He tried harder and harder and harder. He worked for 5-6 months. And he finished the Masechta. He learned over 100 pages. And the father of another boy in the class, he kept his word. He made this huge celebration, and they got up and they made speeches, and they sung and they danced. And then the next year, that boy went to public school. Okay, this man tried. It didn't have an impact that he hoped, but this boy got to learn Torah. It was all for the best. So many, many years passed, and then this man who had made the party was walking in Lakewood, maybe 10, 15 years later, and he sees a young man with a short beard, clearly a student in the yeshiva there in Lakewood. And he said, "Excuse me, sir, are you from Detroit?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Did you remember me?" And the man said, no. He said, I was in your son's class. Do you remember you made that huge celebration at the end of 8th grade? And the man said, yeah. And the boy said, well, the boy you made the party for, that wasn't me. But I was in that class, and I was actually the weakest kid in the class. And I was done with learning. It wasn't going to go well. I was planning on going to 9th grade and doing nothing for the next 4 years. But when I saw the celebration that you made for someone who learned Torah, I decided I can do that too. And I'm going to work hard. And the rest of those 4 years I had in high school were tremendously successful. I worked very, very hard. And look, now I'm a student in yeshiva. I'm tremendously successful. And I've learned so much because of you, because of that one party that you made for that other boy. So looking back, this man thought, wow, he thought he was making this party for the one boy who shouldn't go to public school, but he really made the party for someone else in the class. But when you go to do a mitzvah, it doesn't matter what your intention is. If your intention is good, then good things will come out. It might not be what you expected, but good things will come out. And that's the idea that we have from this parsha. When you go and do Shluach HaKein, a simple mitzvah, Hashem will give you more difficult mitzvah, you'll be able to fulfill that. And he'll give you another one, and he'll continue on the path. And you don't know where each mitzvah will lead you, but the promise is that Hashem is giving us that each mitzvah will lead us in a good direction, and on a good path. And as we're coming into Elul and Rosh Hashanah, it's a wonderful opportunity for now to look for mitzvahs, even the easy ones, the simple ones. Focus on those. If you can take care of those, then Hashem will deliver the harder ones into your hands, and you'll be successful in those as well. We shall have a wonderful year and a wonderful Shabbos. Have a good Shabbos.
Hello, my name is Noach Baron. And I would like to share a Dvar Torah with you on Parshas Ki Tzeitzei. I believe Ki Tzeitzei has the most mitzvos out of any Parsha in the Torah. In fact, the Sefer Chinuch says it has 27 mitzvos aseh and 47 mitzvos lois aseh. A lot of mitzvos, 74 mitzvos. So I'm going to discuss mitzvah Tav Kuf Lamed Hei, which is the mitzvah of hanging. We know that there are four types of mitzvahs based in skila, sreifa, herig, and chenek. But most of the time, after you kill a person, you bury them, you give them a proper burial, and that's it. However, there are two cases where after you stone the person, you actually have to hang him. So what are the two? One is avodah zarah, and one is megadif, blaspheming Hashem, chas v'shalom. Those two, and that's it. And the Minchas Chinuch points out, number one, that you hang him close to sunset, and right after you hang him, you take him down and you bury him. Okay, you don't leave him up there for too long. It's degrading. Even though he's Chayim Misa and he did a terrible thing, we don't want him to embarrass him for too long. We hang him for a minute, take him down, and bury him. Also, you do not hang him on a tree. It has to be something that's detached from the ground, like a pillar that you dug and stuck it to the ground, but it's not attached, it's not a tree. The Minchas Chinuch says that it only applies by a man who does a avodah zarah, or megadif, you hang him after the skila, but a woman who did it, a woman would not get hung. She would get the skila, but she would not get hung. So Minchas Chinuch points out that we know there's two types of people, androgynous and a tumtum, who are spekos. We don't know if they're men or women. Either his organ is covered by skin, or it's somebody who has both. We don't know, is he classified as a man or a woman? Therefore, should we hang him? On the one hand, he says that, well, it's a subject d'areisa, right? This is a mitzvah aseh. This is one of the 613 mitzvahs that you're supposed to do. So he would say, subject d'areisa l'churma, and you should hang this person. However, on the other hand, he says that if, in fact, you are not chayv to hang this person, then you are doing an avera, you are degrading him without reason. So he's not sure which one should take precedence. You should hang him, or as a design to a person, out of suffix, you're not going to hang the person. He lives as a sarachin, he's not sure at the end of the day whether by an androgynous or a tumtum you're going to hang him. The last thing he talks about is, let's say it's close to shkia, it's almost nighttime, and you didn't hang him yet. And if you do hang him, you're not going to have time to bury him until the next day. And we know there's also a mitzvah to bury a person on the day that he dies. So I basically have to either hang him or bury him. Which mitzvah takes precedence? So he says it's very simple. It's clear that the mitzvah of burying a person on the day he dies is only when you can. But if you have no other choice, it's not a problem to delay. For example, let's say for Kavod Hames, let's say it would be more honor for the dead person if they wait to bury him until the next day because you have more people coming to the funeral, then you're allowed to delay it. So he says, so too, anytime you have a mitzvah, including this mitzvah of hanging, you do it even though it'll delay the burial by a day or two. It's not a problem. He says, even if, let's say, for some reason it's going to take 4 or 5 days to get the gallows ready to hang the person, okay, so you'll wait 4 or 5 days, even though normally you try to bury him on the first day, right when he dies. Okay, hopefully this will never happen. We'll never see anybody being hung. Hopefully no one will ever do a avodah zara or megadif. These are the worst aviros imaginable. Have a great Shabbos.
Shalom Aleichem, everyone. This is Eric Goldman, and it is my honor and pleasure to share with you words of Torah from Parshas Ki Tzeitse. I once had the pleasure of coaching a goalie, and this goalie was actually in a very unique situation in that he had never played goalie before, ever. And it was something that he was interested in, he thought he could be good at, so he got some pads, and he shows up to play, and he said, okay, you know, I'm going to play goalie. So the first game he plays, he did okay. He let in a few goals. No practice. And then comes to play a second game. In the second game he plays, he does relatively the same. Stops a bunch of shots, but also lets in a bunch of goals. After that second game, he comes over to me and he says, well, how did I do? I said, well, you did pretty well. You've got a lot of skill, a lot of potential. We just have to work at it. So, but I let in a bunch of goals. I don't understand. Why am I letting in a bunch of goals? And so I said to him, well, let me ask you a question. Before last week, when was the last time you ever put on goalie pads? And he said, well, never. I said, and during this week, did you practice at all? And he said, well, no. So I said to him, well, you have to understand, you've played 2 games. You can't expect that all of a sudden you're going to be an all-star goalie. And he didn't fully grasp what I was trying to tell him. The very first topic in Parshas Ki Tzeitse is the Yisha Yafas Tawar. When Bnei Yisrael goes out to war, if a soldier sees a woman that he's attracted to, that he's drawn to, there's a whole process by which he is allowed to take this woman as his wife. And as part of that process, the pasuk tells us, Uvachsa es avia ves ima yerech yomim. This woman, before the Jewish soldier is allowed to take her, she must cry about her parents for 30 full days. The Ramban explains, why does she have to take 30 days to cry? Because she has to separate herself from her Avodah Zarah background. And it takes that full 30 days of crying about it for us to be sure that she has fully separated herself enough from that Avodah Zarah to be able to be trustworthy to now enter into a marriage with this Jewish soldier. Rav Zelig Pliskin quotes of Chaim Zaitchik, who explains that, you see, we cannot expect a change to take place overnight. We can't just think that this woman who's being taken by this Jewish soldier, all of a sudden she's going to snap her fingers and say, I'm in, let's go, let's get married, let me leave my past behind, let's go for it. But rather, when a person wants to make a change, when they want to internalize certain midos, or change midos that they have, it takes time. We can't expect it to just happen overnight. This goalie I was working with was assuming that he gave himself, okay, 1 game I get. If I play 1 game, I'm going to give a couple of goals. But by the time I play a 2nd game, I should be perfect already, right? Of course not. When we're trying to make a change within ourselves, things take time. It can't just happen just by turning ourselves around in 1 second. We have to put effort into it, and we have to give it time. And sometimes we won't see progress right away. If not, most often, we won't see the progress right away. And if anything, very often, we'll see only regression right away. We're going to fail more often than we succeed at the beginning. But that shouldn't be a deterrent to us. That shouldn't let us lose our confidence. We should understand that to build up our midos, to change our chesronos and to work on our faulty midos, it takes effort and time, that only after a long time we begin to see the peros of all of our efforts. This Isha Yafas Toar needs a full 30 days for us even to begin to believe that she has started to make that change. And of course, the Svarim point to this, the Yerach Yomim, the 30 days,
of course referring to Elul, the month that we are in right now, leading into Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim, where we are trying to analyze ourselves. We're trying to look at our own midos. Where are we holding? What do we need to work on? And to think that we can just do it right before Rosh Hashanah and that will make the change? Of course not. We need a full month of preparation in order to turn to Hashem and say, you see that? I gave you a whole month. I'm really trying to work on myself. I've really made a change. Look at the difference. Because I put in the time, I put in the effort. Because only then can we really turn to Hashem and say, I really am trying. It's not just a one-time thing. It's not just a one-day thing. It's not just a quick phase. I'm going through a transformation. I'm really trying to work on myself. There's a very well-known story about the Netziv, who actually told it over about himself at a siyum that he made for the completion of one of his svarim. But I think the real main point of this story gets lost within the beauty of the story. As the story goes, the Netziv, when he was a younger child, was very unsuccessful in learning. And he overheard his parents having a discussion and saying that, I guess our son is not going to be worthy to learn full time. We're going to have to teach him a trade. To which the Netziv cried all night, and he rededicated himself to learning, and he decided, I'm going to give it everything I have, and I'm going to be able to prove my parents wrong, and I'm going to be back in the Beis Medrash, I'm going to learn as much as I can. And of course, he goes on to grow up to become the Gadol Hador, the Netziv. Now the part of the story that gets lost, I think, is that maybe within our minds we have this conception that the next day he went to the Beis Medrash, and he learned Stark, and he chopped an entire Masechta within one day. And by the end of the week, he had finished all of Shas. And by the end of the month, he had become a posek for the whole town. And then shortly thereafter, he was named Rosh Yeshiva, all within such a short amount of time. But of course, that's not how it happened. I would imagine that the next day, he went to the Yeshiva, and he tried to chop the Tosfos, and he couldn't. The change doesn't happen overnight. We have to give it time. And very often that time includes a lot of struggling. But that doesn't mean we should stop. That just means we have to push ourselves further. We have to give ourselves that time to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we truly are trying to change ourselves. Be'ezus Hashem Yisparach. We should use this month of Elul to show Hashem what we're trying to do, to push ourselves and to try to incorporate those positive midos that we want to be a part of ourselves, to work on our chesronos, and by showing Him how much effort we're putting in and how much time we're willing to give it, Be'ezus Hashem, we should be zocha to come to Rosh Hashanah as new individuals ready for judgment, for bracha and simcha for the entire year. Thank you and have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you for listening. Feel free to learn about all the programs that the Skokie Community Kol has to offer. For any questions, suggestions, or to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, please email us at info@skokiekolo.org.